Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the BBC Maida Vale Studios. Every time we have a concert from here, the presenter promises a special evening, and they are special evenings. But this is not just a special evening, this is a unique evening, because our guest has never done this before. Indeed, she's never performed live in this country before, which is kind of strange considering that she recorded some of her greatest hits right here in London back in the 1970s. But nonetheless, she's never performed live before now here, so you're going to have a great treat. Her recording career started even earlier than that, if you go back to her teenage years with her sister in the group The Simon Sisters. And in a way, she's come full circle because she's with family again tonight with her son, Ben Taylor. It's been one of the great careers in popular music. This is an artist who has won an Oscar for Let the River Run from Working Girl. And she's won a couple of Grammy Awards, Best New Artist, when she emerged in 1971. Her song, You're So Vain, is in the Grammy Hall of Fame. She is certainly one of the finest artists of the last half century. Nobody does it better than Carly Simon.
Girls getting out of the cabs with their suitcases. is a song that I wrote upon returning to the island where I live off the coast of Massachusetts, called Martha's Vineyard. And I was returning at night, and it was so great to return home. And the nostalgia and the excitement, everything all together bound up into one. And also realizing that all of your great ambitions for your career and for fame and fortune are all a dream, and drown your pride in the sea. That was a line that my co-writer actually wrote, and I'm very jealous. I'm going to pretend that I wrote it. So here it is, Never Been Gone. It's a song that I wrote for Heartburn, which was a movie that was directed by Mike Nichols and written by Nora Ephron, starring Meryl Streep and Jack Nicholson. And it's Nora's story about her marriage to Carl Bernstein. And so this is like the apex of the song, when she realizes that they are going to split up, and that She's come back to her baby in the apartment, and okay, here goes.
Mommy pleases, Daddy breezes.
Curly, as they like to say in this country, what do you think of the show so far?
This is truly a Maida Vale experience.
I mentioned to them before we started that this was and is the first time you've played live in this country. And that's pretty extraordinary because you could have sold out venues all across the country at any point in these last X number of years. Why have you chosen not to?
Well, I don't like to fly in the first place. And I've actually lived in England three times, but they were all during periods of times I've been making records. And also I've been very
I've been very wary about performing. It's a scary thing to do. It's, I mean, public speaking is like the number one fear over death. You know, it's just, I mean, if any of you can imagine doing it, it's not altogether comfortable. I happen to feel really comfortable now. But I would say it's a fear thing. It's a feeling that I'm not going to be good enough.
Which everyone disagrees with, of course. But you know that. It also does help a lot that your son, Ben Taylor, is right by your side, doesn't it?
Oh, my gosh. That's...
not so bad for me, I
say, to say the very, very least. And Ben is going to sing some songs. You know, he's going to sing some songs on his own. He's going to just make the room pulsate.
And I
would be delighted to... I feel very at home here, and so you can ask me anything you want, and I will feel free to answer it.
There are a few things, though, that I feel everybody would like to know. But one of them is just a diversion, before I get onto the other two things, because you just did Coming Round Again. And I'm aware that you've had four big film hits in this country, and you couldn't possibly have set out to be a movie song singer. This is the funny thing. And obviously, the first one you probably got the call was Nobody Does It Better, which was Le Bon. Who called you on that one?
That song was written by Marvin Hamlisch and Carol Bayer Sager. And I was very pregnant with him at the time. And I had to kind of like make my dates in a, I had to squash them together so that I wouldn't go into labor while I was having an appointment with my accountant, who I had an appointment with at the same, you know, about the same hour as I had the date with Marvin Hamlisch, who wanted to play me this song from Cubby Broccoli's next James Bond film. And so I didn't think too much about the fact that they were half an hour apart. And the doorbell rang, and I was making tea, and I answered it, and it was the accountant. And he had very straight line of hair around there. I couldn't remember his name. He had horn-rimmed glasses, was tall, and wore a very starched white collar and a blue suit. And I invited him into the living room and asked him if he would like some tea. And he said, yes, indeed, he would like some tea. And so I went in and I, you know, finished the process of pouring the tea into the tea leaves. And while I was doing that, the accountant started to play the piano. And it was Marvin Hamlisch. And he played Nobody Does It Better for me. I mean, I then walked in, and I didn't want to say, hey, listen, I thought you were the accountant. But I went into the room, and I said, you know, I'm so glad that you came, and I would love to hear the song, and what an honor it is to be asked to write a song for a James Bond movie. And I've always wanted to sing a song for a James Bond movie, which I had since... from Russia with Love, or Goldfinger. He played the song for me and sang it. And Marvin is a fantastic piano player. Singer, not so great, but he played the song for me beautifully. And he said, do you think you could sing a little bit back to me? And I did what little I could. And the doorbell rang, and it was the true accountant. And Marvin left, and later I got the call that I got the part. And I recorded the song in 1977, because it was the year you were born. And when I was taken to the screening room to hear the song in the movie, that was the time of the big blackout in New York. And everything in the room, of course, in the film went black. Everything in the city went black, and we were on like the 27th floor in a screening room, and I remember it was boiling hot, and we all went downstairs, Marvin and myself, and I think Carol and Cubby Broccoli, and we all went downstairs in the heat. It was so hot in the city, and we all went back to my apartment, and Marvin played all night. He knows every single song in the book, and he's wonderful, and he's great. Book him for a blackout.
Well, I'll whip through the next three songs, because that one took a long time to tell that wonderful story. No, it's a fantastic story. But I imagine there is not so much behind the second one, which was a top 10 hit in this country called Why, from a film called Soup for One. Now, do you recall that as well?
I recall recording Why. I didn't really know it before I was cast as the singer of that song. And I went into the studio with Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards, and I recorded it to this really funky track. I'd never heard anything so funky. I just remember singing in a rather ballad-like way, like, "Why does your love hurt so much?" And Nile was up there saying, "No, sing it, why?" And I had to shorten. I had never sung anything like, "Why does your love?" And it was very staccato and very, and it was a wonderful experience. He went and mixed it. Bernard Edwards I met only once, but I have had recurrent dreams about him. He is a policeman in all of the dreams. And I have no idea why. Why?
You've already told us the story of Coming Around Again from Heartburn, which leaves your Oscar-winning song, Let the River Run, which I know you're going to be singing in a few minutes. How were you approached for that one, the film Working Girl?
Well, I had already become very, very good friends with Mike Nichols. That friendship originated during the making of Heartburn. And I did a couple of other lesser-known movies during that time. But Mike and I continued to be great friends, and he thought that he'd like to give me a try for Working Girl. And there's this wonderful scene that's the opening scene where a ferry comes across Staten Island Ferry. I don't know how many of you have been to New York and seen the Staten Island Ferry, but I'm sure all of you have seen pictures of the Twin Towers. And the Staten Island Ferry comes right in toward that part of the New York skyline. And it's very, very moving to see that movie now. But I wanted, as soon as I saw that scene, I knew that it was a hymn of sorts. I knew that I wanted it to be a hymn, but it was a jungle hymn, because New York was a jungle, and especially Wall Street, and that amazing greed. But it turned out that the song had so many other meanings to it that it's not just a jungle hymn. It's a hymn for many things, and every time I've either sung it live or recorded it, it's had a very different feeling to it.
Well, we're going to find out what feeling it has in a few moments, but we're going to hear some tunes from Ben now. Then I'm going to ask you a couple of other things, some of which are obvious questions, and then we'll proceed. But let's turn it over now to Ben Taylor.
Excellent.
All right. So allow me to try to explain how this really went down, because I do love playing my songs, and I'm thrilled to be here to have the opportunity to play for you people. It's extraordinarily intimidating to follow this act. And the way that it works is that it's not just that she's never played here before. She seldom plays, period. That's what it's like. And to get her to come out on stage, it seems like such a big deal, because she says, "God, how am I going to work up all these numbers?" So when Paul asked us to do this, she said, "I can't pull a show together. You're going to have to do something." You know, so here I am in the middle of my mother's set, where she's going to go, you know, get a drink back there or something like that. I got to try to entertain you guys with my little numbers. I figure my only shot is to go in a completely different direction.
It should have come as no surprise. When I opened up my eyes, should have seen it coming. I heard the drummer drumming, but I couldn't read the warning signs. Ooh. Dirty little thing, so I say you can try to deny, but we know that you play AA. Dirty little games, and then you can say that we're wrong, but we know what you're like. Dirty, 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 dirty. Dirty, 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 dirty. planet I presided as a junior without a father. But here is where the plot rewards me, friend. Senseless, I should have warned you, but you know how the story ends. Little creepy night crawling, obsequious, appalling to the senses. No wonder why we still fall. Fences make the best neighbors. More crime, less wages, tall time. Test stages, princess is the time again. Now with eyes open, wise on the lenses, I'm surprised and offended that you're so damn clandestine. Have not you learned your lesson? I'm more concerned than stressing. You little wolf dressing up like a lamb again. Dirty, dirty, dirty. That's just my dirty little game that I play by myself. How I want, any why, any way. Every little dance is a lie. You insist that you can't, so I know that you try. Dirty, 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 dirty.
Song for you guys before we get back into the Carly Simon section of the show. She really should have let me do my songs first, I think. I'm going to play you this next song because I was madly in love with a girl who was too young for me. And as so often happens in these kind of situations, I came home and she had moved all of her stuff out of my house with no explanation, and she couldn't bear to talk to me about it. You know, I called her up on the phone. I left her messages, nothing doing. And finally I said to my sister Sally, I said, you got to just pretend to be somebody else. Get her on the phone for me. And so she called up pretending to be like a, you know, somebody from the IRS looking for taxes or something like that. And she finally got on the phone. I said, I got you. And she said, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, and she obviously, she just felt so guilty. She didn't know how to deal with me. She couldn't talk to me. I said, you don't have to give me another chance or anything like that. I just need some closure. All I want to do is know what happened, because I, you know, I'd feel like I deserve it. So she said, of course you do. Let's meet in a neutral area tomorrow morning. We're late at 9 o'clock in the morning in the field out by the community center. It seemed like a pretty good location. I showed up 10 minutes early just to be sure to be, you know, professional about it. Time came, she wasn't there. 10 minutes late, she wasn't there. Half an hour late, finally her aunt showed up, you know. And her aunt said, and I've been friends with her aunt a long time, she said to me, she just couldn't make it, man. She couldn't come. She can't bear to see you or talk to you. She doesn't know what to say. Is there anything that I could tell her for you? And I was furious. I said, no, you tell her that she should have come herself, and here's her ukulele. And I stormed back all huffy puffy. I began to think, there are some things that I should have told her aunt to tell her for me. And so when I got home, David and I shook this song out of our guitars for her aunt.
You can tell her hello, you can tell her goodbye. You can sing her a song, you can tell her a lie. You can tell her she'll probably understand. she's old, oh, older. After it's over, it's over. So tell her I haven't been lonely and cold. Just since she's been gone, I've been fine on my own. You can tell her she won't have to look back over her shoulder. 'Cause after it's over, it's over. She's got so much to do, but she's got nothing to say.
Ben Taylor, everybody. And to celebrate her son and sing some more, Carly Simon's going to come back on. Yay! You had this raffle prize or auction prize where you supposedly, for the winning prize, whispered the name of the person that Your So Vain is about into the ear of the winner. The only reason I bring this up is because I want you to know that because of you, last Friday, national television came round to my house and asked me on camera who I thought that song was about and was it somebody called David. And, of course, it's because you've had a little competition going to have someone come up with a video for Your So Vain, because there never was one. And
it's in process.
Right.
I mean, the competition is in process.
Right. So everybody who likes to make videos and wants to make a splash, maybe you can make the definitive video of Your So Vain. But you were interviewed and you said there's a hint in the track on this new album, Never Been Gone. And very amusingly, of course, I listened, and over the bridge, it sounds like something is being whispered backwards. I don't know. You know, I stopped moving turntables about with Sgt. Pepper, trying to figure out what the Beatles were saying backwards. But I was told that it was David. Does that seriously mean? I only have to ask you this because you brought it up.
I did? No, I, you know, yes, there is. There is, I mean, I didn't mean to announce this, but there is a clue embedded within the new album, Never Been Gone. It's not as simple as just playing it backward. And you could bring Ovid into it, because if it sounds as if there's a V, there are many names that backward, a backward V would be
Isn't she politely evasive, ladies and gentlemen?
But Carly, I want you to be evasive because I want this to be one of these questions that is not answered until you're 100 years old. Do you remember when American Pie, earlier the same year as You're So Vain, was number one, and there were articles in magazines, including, I remember, a two-page spread in People magazine, what is Don McLean talking about? What are all these references? And it's best left to the imagination, isn't it?
He gave it up too easy. That's why that song never did anything.
But if, seriously, if someone tomorrow said, "You're So Vain" is about Terry Wogan, that would end the charm. I'd rather wait until you're 100 and then you can
tell
us.
No, except that, but there have been too many, I have told too many people both the truth and the not truth. So I don't think that anybody would be able to. And the person, Dick Ebersol, who's a man who was hired by NBC and who still works at NBC, who won the contest to learn who "You're So Vain" was about, and I did tell him the truth. But I said, if I ever hear it back, I will say I told you a lie. So it's my prerogative, and I don't know when it's going to come out. When obviously Warren Beatty thinks that it's about him, and I'm delighted. I'm so flattered that he thinks that it's about him, and it may be.
Well, I don't think it's about me. And if it is, I'll be pleasantly surprised. So you're going to do, among other songs now, "You're So Vain." And just one question. Why now, at this point in your life, are you revisiting some of your great numbers?
Well, you really want to know the truth?
Yeah, well, I can imagine two good reasons, one of which is economic, and the other is musical. But go ahead.
Well, the truth is that just before this record came out, or not just before, a year before, I put out a record called "This Kind of Love," and it was on the Starbucks label, Hear Music. And 4 days before I released the record, Starbucks pulled Hear Music away from its division. There was no longer a music division. They canceled it. And nobody told me. And so I continued to promote "This Kind of Love" when there were no records in the Starbucks store. And Ben just kept at me. He said, "Mom, you cannot waste this time because you won't know what Starbucks has planned for you until a year from now or 2 years from now." I'm still waiting. And, you know, let's do something that is beloved by you, by us, and show me how you meant it. And so we all sat down in the living room with our guitars and with our mics, and mics traveling everywhere through kitchen pots and just all over. And we recorded this album. It took a while because Ben and David and Larry were on tour, and I was left with a machine and I had no idea how to work. And that's really what happened. And then it developed, and I never thought that this album was going to come together. But Ben had such wonderful ideas about the reworking of certain songs, and many of the songs, including one we're not going to do tonight, which is "Anticipation," has a whole other meaning to it now, just having lived through the time span that I've lived through. And there's a line in that song which is, "These are the good old days," which means something totally, totally different to me now. It was getting back into the new emotion of old songs, and also getting back into the new musicality of them, and trying to figure out and figuring out what we could do with Ben's imagination and Ben's incredible wonderfulness as a son and his friend's wonderfulness as a son.
Can I just interject?
Sorry, I'm going on
too long. For a second? No, because I appreciate all the credit, but I really honestly don't deserve it. When we went out to, I'm only just refreshing your memory because I know you like to give me too much credit, but we went out to promote the Starbucks album, "This Kind of Love," and of course, her fans would be mad if we didn't play a couple of her old school, you know, massive hits. And the versions that we worked up, like, I can't take that much credit. We worked them up on the road for that tour. And the versions we worked up, we would play them for the audiences at these shows. And so many people came up to me after the shows and said, you guys got to record that version. That's really cool. So, like, I would love to be able to take as much credit as you give me. But honestly, you know, the songs stand up on themselves. You could sit there and just whisper them and everyone would love them.
Well, we're going to hear another example right now. And one of the songs we've already talked about, which is Let the River Run.
I will do it. I will do it.
One.
Thank you so much.
Two, three.
can't thank you enough. This is from the new album, this particular version is. And we have a competition for anybody to try to make a video of it, which will be the ultimate video, because there was never a video made of this song. And so it's going to go, you know, anybody who has never made a movie before, we recorded it like 14 times in front of a green screen. You can put anything you want up there. And the winner gets to show it at the Tribeca Film Festival in New York.
Oh, well, let's hit it, Jeff.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Strategically dipped below one eye. Your scarf, it was apricot. You had one eye in the mirror as you watched yourself go by. And all the girls dreamed that they'd be your partner. They'd be your partner. And you're so song is about you, you're so vain. there were clouds in my coffee. Saratoga, where your horse naturally won. Then you flew your Learjet up to Nova Scotia to see the total eclipse of the sun. When you're where you should be all the time, and when you're not, you're with some unknown spy or the wife.
And the best radio network on the planet still in service.
And Ben Taylor. And David Saul. Larry Chauncey. Beck Sussman.
And the inimitable Carly Simon. Thank you. Ben, Carly, David, Larry, Matt, thank you. Thank you to the Radio 2 Live Music Unit, and thank you for coming. Good night.
This is BBC Radio 2, online, on digital, and on 88 to 91 FM.